all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We also want to thank our latest national sponsor, Veteran Lending Council. It is a community dedicated to educating lenders, realtors, and veterans on the VA Home Loan Benefit Program. You can check them out on Facebook and other social media outlets. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Kathleen Anderson. She is a United States Air Force retiree after, fresh one actually, in the last year, after almost 21 years, retired out as a senior master sergeant. We'll talk about that a little bit. But Kathleen, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about your career, but you now have a role as a journalist and a political commentator, and it's one of those articles on the green military that caught my fancy, and we're going to talk a little bit about. But why don't we start with, how did a nice girl like you end up spending 21 years in the United States Air Force?
Yeah, you know, and you say a nice girl like me because you just don't know me very well yet. So I'd love to say, you know, that I enlisted out of like a deep sense of service. But I think a lot of people my generation that joined before 9/11, you've got some that joined, you know, because their family members had been in, and mine had been in as well. But mine was really out of kind of a lack of options, to be honest. I had a great childhood, but we didn't quite have enough money to send me to college. And while I was an above average student, I didn't quite have the grades for a full scholarship. And to be honest, college just wasn't really something I was thinking about when I was, you know, young and 17. And so I decided to enlist. But I will say that I re-enlisted because I fell in love with it. I love traveling the world and doing exciting things and meeting all sorts of different kinds of people. And so it definitely grew on me over time.
As did your education. You got a bachelor's of political science from American Military University. You picked up additional education at Syracuse University in politics and civic engagement, and ultimately some studies at George Washington University College of Professional Studies, again in the political management area and government. So you know, we all go through that period where like we don't want any more schooling. Then, geez, I can get more schooling. This is great. And that sort of happened to you, I take it.
Yeah. I got my bachelor's degree and I took a little bit of a break and, you know, kind of had also hit one of those roads where you're like, you're not quite sure what you want to do. You know, I kind of flirted with being a teacher and thought about getting my master's in education, thought maybe I'd be a history teacher somewhere, and then realized I don't really like having to follow a curriculum. And so probably education's not my strong suit. And in the military, you know, they try and kind of like steer you to get a master's in what your MOS or your AFSC was. And so being a financial manager by trade, there was a lot of pressure to get an MBA. And, you know, I applied to go to University of Nebraska to get my MBA, and I ended up not getting accepted, which when I found out, you'd think I'd be bummed, but I was actually really relieved.
Thank God I don't have to do that, right?
Yeah. And no offense to University of Nebraska, go Huskers. But MBA was just not something I was excited about. And so I was really lucky to kind of stumble across the master's degree in political management from GW. And I knew instantly that that was my jam. I've always loved politics and government and American history. And I was like, I feel like that's really, really where I need to go. So yeah, it was a great experience. It was a really good school.
And over time, your duties in the Air Force evolved into resource and financial management and senior leadership positions. And they tell us a little bit about where that took you.
Yeah, definitely. So I honestly didn't have much of a passion for my AFSC, but I enjoyed working with airmen. I enjoyed being a supervisor. And so that led me to get kind of steered in a senior leadership direction within the Air Force. And so I transitioned from, you know, doing, you know, the bean counter, the money counter, to becoming what we call a group superintendent, so a senior enlisted leader, which was both like the most rewarding job I had in the military and the most stressful job I had. But I loved it. And that's really what kind of propelled the last 5 years of my career. And then I ended up being able to make senior master sergeant at 18 years, which was quite an achievement. I was very blessed to be able to make that rank. And then decided that it was time to retire at 20. So, yeah.
Well, along the way, and I want you to tell some background on it because I couldn't find any, you received, among other awards in your illustrious career, the Bronze Star. Tell us a little bit about that meritorious service.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time deployed, actually. And people always kind of seem surprised by that, because when you say that you served in the Air Force, people immediately like think you were a pilot. And then when you tell them that you weren't, there's always that kind of like, aw, disappointment. but I actually spent quite a bit of time deployed. And one of my deployments, the one that earned me the Bronze Star, it was one of my times in Afghanistan. And so I worked with very special teams of individuals who are trained to do very special, unique missions. And I've always been more excited about my deployments than probably my home station work, because I like to be able to really focus in. And when you're deployed, there's nothing like really focusing on the job, so to speak. So without getting into too many details, I was just a very focused resource manager for that group, and helped make sure that a lot of very difficult missions were able to get accomplished. So,
well, part of the reason I ask is just what you said. Everybody goes, oh, Air Force pilot. Oh, yeah. But you can't have special operations. You can't have other specialized duties of airframes without making sure all the stuff that supports it shows up where it's supposed to and on time. Otherwise, you end up like a Russian Army tank division that runs out of petrol. So can you elaborate a little more about what resource management is, so that those who are going, I thought only warfighters went to the front line, get a better idea?
Yeah. I mean, we end up calling it kind of money is its own weapon system, so to speak. So, you know, you can't really get anything done in this world without having to spend some cash. And that includes operating a war. And, you know, when you're doing resource management, that's all matter of beast, whether it's moving money or using money to purchase supplies or moving supplies, very closely related to like your logistics folks in that realm as well. You know, it's, you can have a highly trained special operator or highly trained, you know, fighter pilot, but none of that stuff works unless somebody's paying those bills, unless somebody's making sure that all of the equipment is where it needs to be. And then sometimes you know, there are things that you purchase that aren't necessarily tangible either. So there's nothing in this world that's free, to include
goodwill and cooperation. So we get the drift. But I want people to think about that, because, again, you just tend to think of the warfighter or the pilot without realizing that there are really important jobs sitting behind that to make that all work. So let's turn to the new venture, which caught my eye, which is you are now a political commentator and writer, journalist, freelance journalist. And you recently wrote an article called "Biden's Green Military is Absolute Nonsense." And before we get into that, talk a little bit about how freeing it is to now be able to express your opinions unfettered.
Yeah. I mean, can you tell from that title that I have a hard time forming an opinion?
Yeah,
right?
really.
So this new venture has really been very exciting and very new. You know, I didn't study study classic journalism or anything like that. But obviously from my civilian education, it's easy to tell I have a passion for civics and politics and news and all of that. And so, you know, I loved serving my country, but it can be difficult, right? Like, you know, you can vote, and that's really kind of where that ends. It was funny when I would take my political management courses at GW, everybody in my class had, you know, an extensive background. You know, you'd have to talk about what you've done in politics, and they were campaign managers or staffers or legislative aides. And then there'd be little old me that would say, like, oh, I vote.
And I can't tell you about the rest. Yeah.
Right. And so to be retired and to be able to freely, you know, engage in, you know, political thought and critique, and to actually have other people read it and be interested in it is very freeing, but still can also be a little jarring. I still have my moments where I'm like, oh, wait a second, I can say that now. I can be open with my opinion. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
Well, this was right around Earth Day, where all kinds of people were saying all kinds of things about, you know, saving the planet. And one of them was the President of the United States, who said, quote, "We're going to start the process where every vehicle in the United States military, every vehicle, is going to be climate friendly. Every vehicle. I mean it," close quote. And I suspect it's that quote that got your brain stimulated and you said, wait a minute, I got to talk about this. So tell us what went through your brain resulting in this explanation that this is absolute nonsense.
Yeah. You know, there's having to deal with money for so long while I was in the service, and then just basic common sense. Seeing that, and I watched his speech, I just thought, man, none of this makes any sense, nor is it really something that I think we need to really focus on, to be honest, when it comes to defense. And anybody that's been in the service recently should be aware and be able to attest to the fact that the Department of Defense has been working on energy efficiency for at least the last two decades while I was in. I mean, anything that was going to get purchased, you needed to make sure that it was as energy efficient as possible and things like that. And so, you know, the idea that every single military vehicle was going to be green made no sense to me. Like, you know, I thought, are all up armored vehicles going to be electric now? Like, how are you going to, well, hold on a second, bad guys, let me plug in my Humvee real quick. We'll be there in a bit. You know, it just didn't make any sense to me. And then when you talk about military vehicles, that's all manner of beasts, like aircraft and ships, and it's just a ridiculous notion.
Well, the political cartoon that went with the article was, I thought, captured it when it, you know, it's an F-35, and it says ETA on the charge, and there's a Tesla sign, and it says about 6 months. You know, it is a, you can make broad statements, but when you've been there and you know the details, it's kind of a different thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I had quoted the vice president, who made a joke somewhere about, you know, the Marines, you know, female Marines being excited to not have to carry around big 20-pound batteries, to just be able to have like a rolled up solar panel. And I thought, gosh, like if a 20-pound battery was the only thing you had to worry about when you're lugging around hundreds of pounds of gear, and especially when you're in the, you know, the heat of combat, I really don't believe that is on the minds of Marines, whether they're men or women. I mean, I wasn't a Marine, obviously, but
yeah, she said this,
I know that wasn't my concern.
Your article says the vice president mentioned that at the Naval Academy that, boy, just, you know, these solar panels, that's, boy, that's going to make every female Marine feel so much better. It just becomes a bit of a caricature, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And I'm not sure that that, you know, I'm sure it's meant to be a joke of some sort, but I'm not sure it would land very well. You know, like I know as a female in the service, I was very proud of the fact that I carried all my own gear. And the last thing you want to be kind of viewed as is like too weak to carry your things. Right. I'm not quite sure that their joke writers are quite on the ball there. But
well, I worry more about their policy writers if these statements were really just to be a joke, it'd be great. If it was, if it's to shape policy, it just sort of makes you wonder how much they really understand what the what military equipment's all about. And it's easy to say we should protect Mother Earth while fighting future wars. But I think as we've now seen in Ukraine, war fighting is about breaking things, not about protecting Mother Earth. So, whole different kind of problem. You also got a chance, and this is the I suppose life of a political commentator is there's something in the world every day that gives you a chance to express your opinions, and you wrote an article on historic court martial of Air Force General. Could be a sign of things to come. Can you? And that was done again at the end of April here, regarding the court martial of Major General William T. Cooley. Could you explain, kind of, not so much what he did wrong, although it's been in the general press, but sort of how, what your hope is that comes out of this?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, one of the things I try and look for with the pieces that I do, you know, you always want to cover, you know, anything that's big news. But I think it's important to cover the stuff that just doesn't get enough coverage, or that especially, you know, I tend to cover the military beat, if you will. So things that maybe non-military background folks would really understand. And so there's so much to this particular instance that I think is fascinating and can provide some hope in the future. You know, in my article, I mentioned, you know, with the NDAA that was signed, you know, a lot of people might not realize that sexual harassment wasn't a crime in the military. And, you know, sexual harassment tends to lead to other more egregious things, you know, whether it be sexual assault, rape, or, you know, like in the case of Vanessa Gillen, you're actually murdered, right? And so, you know, there's a stigma, and they talk about it a lot. If you've been in the military, and especially as a female in the military, it can be very difficult to come forward if you've been a victim. And then especially if you are a victim from somebody who's in your chain of command. And, you know, in this case, this is a major general. And so I think finally, thanks to in part Vanessa Gillen's family and lawmakers paying attention to this and seeing that, like, you know, we're in, you know, the 2020s right now. And, you know, if you're sending your young daughter into the military, the percentage of chance that they might be, you know, stigmatized by this is pretty alarming. And it's probably about time that we start addressing this more. And so I thought it was really interesting that finally there was, you know, this historic court martial, you know, right on the heels of the NDAA being signed in December. And then, of course, you know, back when with Vanessa Gillen, that movement. So I just thought it needed a little extra oomph. And so we did an article on it.
Well, I think that was useful in that regards, because the National Defense Authorization Act, you know, which always gets packed with all kinds of interesting things that you really have to go through the act each year to go, did they put anything interesting in here, you know, besides the money? That NDAA made sure that those cases, sexual assault, murder, kidnapping, are taken out of the victim and alleged perpetrator's chain of command, as you mentioned, and creates a, in the future at least, an independent special trial counsel for those sorts of things of military prosecutors who will take those things on. And as you mentioned, it made it a standalone offense in the Uniform Code of Commercial Justice. So, you know, really kind of all important things in a number of fronts. And one of the senators who's been pushing on this issue of sexual harassment and assault in the military for a long time is Senator Kirsten Gillibrand out of New York. And she voted against it. Can you tell us why she did?
Yeah. So this is where, you know, why I kind of have a little bit of caution, of my, like, cautious optimism. So, you know, while there's a lot of great things that have come out of the NDAA in this regard, there's still a lot of authority that commanders wield. For instance, you know, commanders can select court members, they can approve or deny immunity requests. They're in charge of hiring expert witnesses and consultants. And really kind of the thing that stands out to, lawmakers and then somebody like me is the fact that commanders can also still stop any prosecution simply by allowing the accused to separate from service rather than face a court martial. And you know, that's pretty incredible if you think about it. And you'd like to think that that kind of activity would never happen. But the unfortunate truth is that it definitely could and probably has happened a few times.
Oh, no, no doubt. And that's why tying it back to the court-martial of Major General Cooley, at that level, you know, a lot of times in the past, I'm sure that it was a wink and a nod and somebody would have said, hey, Bill, you know, if you want to retire with both stars, you got to just put in your retirement papers. Otherwise, you're going to get hung up in this. And so there's a cautious optimism, but, you know, there's some hope, too. I think that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the more that, you know, people, you know, former service members and current service members step forward and, you know, tell their stories, and the more that, you know, journalists do the same, I think that we'll get there. I think it's just going to take some time. You know, the military is a wonderful place, and it gave me so many wonderful gifts. But in a lot of ways, and like anybody that reads my articles knows that I can be rather critical of the Department of Defense as well. It exists in its own bubble. And in some ways, there's, you know, a real reason for it. You know, the profession of arms is unlike any other profession on the planet and requires a different set of rules in many respects. But in some ways, it is to the detriment of service members and often to female service members and like your lower enlisted rank service members who just don't have a voice to amplify.
Well, Kat Anderson, if people want to hear your voice or want to reach out and comment on some of your articles, where would you direct them?
Yeah, well, you know, first I would, you know, direct them to The Political Insider. I am not the only writer for The Political Insider. There's tons of just really great content out there, especially if you want to be able to kind of see some stories that you might not see as well. So yeah, thepoliticalinsider.com is where I write. And then also, you know, I post fairly regularly on Twitter. I know Twitter, but who knows? Maybe Twitter's going to be exciting now with Elon Musk taking over. So I'd love for people to follow me on Twitter. I'm at KATBEAUVIC. And that's a great place to find my articles and then just some other random musings I sometimes put out into the Twitterverse.
Well, I enjoyed the articles. I did think it was, you were giving a good, clear perspective, something that sometimes when you read more mainstream things, you feel they're throwing punches left or right or holding their punches. But I appreciated the clarity and opinions that you gave here, and I look forward to some more of them, and I suspect sooner or later you'll end up writing one on Elon Musk.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan. So I've even done an article. My mom was so excited. She said, I bet you Elon Musk is going to comment. He hasn't yet.
He may not still.
Yet, but one of these days.
Well, I want to thank you, Senior Master Sergeant retired Kathleen Anderson, for your time in the United States Air Force, but also for the political commentary and writing that you're doing now for the Political Insider. We appreciate the time you've given to Veterans Radio today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I'd love to be back anytime.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Press Corps Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. And the Veterans Lending Council, which advises lenders, realtors, buyers about VA Home Loan Program, and you can find them on Facebook. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.